Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. There's drama in this hour. Later on from Dr. Christian from 1945, but first a broadcast of the Hallmark Playhouse called A Letter to Mr. Priest, a CBS broadcast from November 17, 1949.
Remember, a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards, bring you Lou Ayres in Margaret Cousins' A Letter to Mr. Priest on the Hallmark Playhouse. Each week, Hallmark will bring you Hollywood's greatest stars and outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we present our dramatization of an engaging story called A Letter to Mr. Priest by Margaret Cousins. I came across this recently in a volume of Best American Short Stories, and I think you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Miss Cousins' chief character is a country lawyer, and she does for that profession what other writers have done for the doctor and the schoolmaster. That is, she presents him as a human being, and in doing so asks a question that a good many of us must have. What does real success in life amount to? For our star tonight, we are fortunate indeed to have that fine actor, Lou Ayres. As the story begins, Marshall Fannin, attorney at law, is standing outside his home in Fort Mason. From the mailbox, he extracts an official-looking envelope, and as he slowly walks back to the house, he begins to read a letter whose contents, well, our story will tell you in a moment. And now a word about Hallmark cards from Frank Goss before we begin the first act of A Letter to Mr. Priest, starring Lou Ayres.
At Christmas, as on every memorable occasion, you'll take special pride in sending Hallmark cards. Because just as for hundreds of years the word Hallmark has been the distinguishing symbol of quality, so today the Hallmark on the back of your greeting cards is your assurance of finest quality and perfect taste. It's a symbol of quality all who receive your cards will quickly recognize and realize you cared enough to send the very best. Now, Hallmark Playhouse, presenting Margaret Cousins' A Letter to Mr. Priest, starring Lou Ayres.
Class of 1917 of Franklin University will celebrate its 30th anniversary with a grand reunion on May 23, 1947. Your committee is preparing a commemoration brochure of this noteworthy class, and in going over our records, we observe that you were nominated then as the man most likely to succeed. We've somehow lost track of your activities, and we wondered if you would favor us with a report of your accomplishments to date to be included in our booklet. Sincerely, Adam Priest, Grand Reunion Chairman. Man most likely to succeed. What a joke.
What's that you said, Mark?
Oh, nothing, Joe. Nothing.
You look tired, darling. You've been working too hard.
Joe, it isn't how hard you work. It's the results that count. Joe, well, I've been practicing law here in Fort Mason for over 25 years. Just what have I accomplished? What have I done for you? What have I given you?
27 years of happiness, Marsh. What more could I ask?
But I've really done nothing. Nothing but cause you to struggle through all these years as the wife of a country lawyer. But I'm through with Fort Mason, and I'm through with the law.
Through? Why, Marsh, you're only 50. You're a young man.
Well, maybe there'd be a chance somewhere else. Doing something else.
Wherever you went, whatever you did, there'd be a chance. You're that kind of a man. But I don't really think you want to leave Fort Mason.
Can you give me one reason why I should stay?
There are many reasons. But I think you'll best find the answer within yourself, Marsh. It'll come from your heart. And no amount of talking will help. I'll go and prepare dinner.
Funny, I believed it once myself. About 30 years ago, 1917. Graduation day.
Marsh, the world is yours. The man most likely to succeed, the most beautiful girl in the school in love with you. I believe that if you wanted to be president, you'd wind up in the White House.
Well, I don't know about that, Ollie. After all, I'm only 21, and... How old was the youngest president when he took office?
I can't exactly say, but you could be the youngest.
Gee, thanks. Well, you know, Ollie, we're a team. You and I are going to build the most enviable record as lawyers this country has ever known. Now, we're going to New York and start from there. Garrett and Granger, the biggest law firm in the city, will fight for our services. No practicing in small towns for us.
Now, wait, Marsh. You know very well they've already offered you a job, and I wasn't included in them.
My boy, if they want my services, they'll take you or else.
No, Marsh, I'm grateful, but...
And that's the way it has to be. Well, after all, we've been friends since we were kids. We grew up together. We've dreamed dreams together. Well, we're going to succeed together.
Marsh, I couldn't. I don't expect to run.
Just start packing, Ollie. We're on our way.
Marsh, I wish in this lifetime I could meet one other friend like you. But that's asking for too much. I'm not that lucky. So long, Marsh.
So long.
Hey, you're coming with me. Ollie!
Marsh, I've been looking all over the campus for you. I should think you...
Hello, Cynthia.
Well, what's the matter with you? You became a lawyer today. You're supposed to be happy.
Well, I am. It's just that Ollie...
Oh, Marsh. Marsh, don't let him spoil this day. Think about me, darling. You do love me, don't you?
Oh, more than you'll ever believe. I'm going to give you everything. Everything that's as beautiful as you are.
Well, I may have expensive tastes, Marsh, dear.
Well, nothing will be too good for you if you wait for me.
Forever, Marsh. Forever.
Forever. A few months later, the Lusitania was sunk and we were at war. Cynthia? She married a new minted Louis in a new minted Air Force. And I became Private First Class Marshal Fannin, who spent 9 months trying to convince my sergeant I was the man most likely to succeed. And I did. He kept me digging trenches overtime. And Ollie, well, we never did get a chance to team up. He died. A war hero. And in 1919, New York would have been a very lonesome place for a discharged soldier without a friend. But the offer from Garrett and Granger was still good. And I couldn't wait to get started with my law in the big city. Only it didn't happen. My father was very ill. Hello, Pop.
Oh, I'm glad you're here, boy. The office needs you.
Why, that's nonsense. You'll be back in a day or two.
You like New York?
Oh, yes. I haven't gotten started yet, but it's a big city. It means everything. Opportunity, glory, achievement.
I don't know that that's everything.
Oh, well,
Fort Mason's a pretty fine place. I never got rich here, but I've got a lot of friends. I've kind of liked being a country lawyer, Marsh. You can help so many people.
Oh, every man to his taste.
Yeah, you wouldn't be interested. I kind of hoped you would. I did need you here, but... You go back to New York.
New York? Oh, it'll have to wait, Pop. And 6 months, Pop was dead, and I was a country lawyer. There are no prizes for accepting responsibility. Who can call that accomplishment? They say it's instinct, doing the right thing, and... Well, Pop's clients had to be served. There were other cases pending. There was no other way. Then in 1920, I met Josephine Burns at a picnic.
Remember me as a kid, Marsh?
I sure do, Joe. You live near Brewer Fork.
Wrong. You must be thinking of someone else.
Oh, I could have sworn it was you. Didn't you wear pigtails?
Wrong again. Would it help if I told you I was riding a bicycle and fell off? And you picked me up?
Was that you, Joe?
Uh-huh. You were my first crush.
Imagine.
I never quite got over you. But this day, I get the same thrill speaking to you.
Oh, you're foolish.
Oh, no. If you don't mind my boldness, I'll admit no man has ever taken the place of my first crush.
Now, how can you dislike a woman who's honest and amusing and not too unattractive in her own way? I enjoyed going out with Joe to pass the time. But when I thought of a woman in my life, I was still thinking of someone as beautiful as Cynthia. I still visualized myself in New York, the great trial lawyer, triumphant in the accomplishment of justice, and then going out on the town and hearing people say, "There goes the next attorney general. And that beautiful woman with him is his wife." Only one thing really irked me in Fort Mason, and that was that the people felt I was too young to assume their responsibilities. Well, it was late at night, and I was glooming in the office. "It won't work, Joe. I'll have to wait about 40 years to be good enough for them. I can't get anywhere."
"They're just fools. They just don't know how wonderful..."
"Well, they're right. I haven't made much progress in a year."
"Well, then why stay here? You've told me ever so many times that your future is in New York. There's nothing to stop you now."
"Joe, if a man can't succeed as a country lawyer, well, what chance is there for him in a big city?"
"Oh, I don't know. You have drive and ambition."
"I'll prove myself here first. I'll be darned if I'll let these people lick me."
"That's the way I like to hear you talk. But about the people trying to lick you, now you're wrong. You shouldn't be discouraged because another generation doesn't take you on. Your day is tomorrow."
"I don't know what there is about you, Joe, but you make a man feel all warm inside."
"Couldn't be that I'm beautiful."
"But you are beautiful, Joe. To me, you're the most beautiful woman in the world." I fell in love with Joe. In those first years of our marriage, the struggle, the striving, the mammoth victories that now seem so insignificant, the depressing failures that now seem so thoroughly unimportant, and the power and the glory that goes with being the big provider. But clients weren't plentiful, and when the Mirrodin Oil Company called for counsel in a land title case, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. It was money, publicity, celebrity even.
"Yes, here, Marsh. The documents are all on our side. We can force Bisbee to vacate the land in 30 days. It's just a matter of interpretation of the law."
"Well, that's true, Mr. Snell. But there's a human factor to consider. How do we go about forgetting old man Bisbee himself? That land is part of his body. After 20 years of scratching it with a plow, grubbing it with his muscles, and watering it with his sweat..."
"Just whose side are you on, man?"
"Looks like I can't take this case, Mr. Snell. My interpretation just won't jive with yours."
"You're a hick."
"What?"
"You're a high-grass Pollyanna, and I'm lucky I found it out in time.
Goodbye.
Well, don't forget your hat."
"Oh, Marsh."
"Are you hurt, Joe?"
"Yes."
"We needed his money, didn't we, Joe?"
"Yes."
"I'm sorry, honey. I don't know what came over me."
"You did right. I wouldn't have had it any other way."
How many worlds would you have to search before you could find a woman like Joe? I don't think there are that many. And I wonder what I might be doing now if I had represented Mirrodin Oil. I might have been a very big man. And Snell was right. My opinion didn't matter at all. Old man Bisbee lost his land. Not a very bright move for the man most likely to succeed, was it? But I'm not sorry I took my stand. Funny how the pattern of life works. You turn a job down because you let your heart dictate instead of your mind, and you think you're the loser. Somewhere along the line, without any explanation, you find that isn't so. Suddenly, people become amiable. You make new friends and begin to gain stature in the community. New clients come with their problems, and you're part of their life. But in 1929, I bought Joe a beaver fur coat. There's no way to explain what that meant in pride.
Marsh, look at it. Look at it. It's beautiful.
No one else could look as beautiful in it as you do, darling. I wish I could have given it to you a long time ago.
Oh, don't go talking that way. I wouldn't have appreciated it then.
I love you, Joe.
I'll bet you do. Else, how could you spend all that money on a fur coat for me? Kiss me.
You know something? Your eyes match the color of the coat, only they're so much more beautiful.
Oh, darling.
A long time ago, I used to say to myself, Marsh Fannin, you'll be the Attorney General of New York. Someday you'll be married to a lovely lady and you'll be so proud of her when you walk down Fifth Avenue. Well, Joe, I'm sorry I can't make you Fifth Avenue. But would you take a walk down Main Street, Fort Mason, with Marshall Fannin, LLD?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Come in.
Mr. Fannin, please, could I talk to you?
Well, of course, Arnie. What's on your mind?
I better leave.
Mr. Fannin, is it a crime to be a foreigner?
Well, I wouldn't know why.
But others, they think so. I come from the old country. Soon I will become citizen. I work hard on my farm, and my Anna, she work in the field with me. So why cannot I sell my crop?
I don't know. Was there anything wrong with it?
Oh, no. I go to market and no one will buy. I ask them why. No one will talk to me. I ask Mr. Braun, and he takes me away from everybody and tells me not to say who tells. It is just that I am a foreigner no one will buy.
Well, that's interesting. A man can't earn a living because he wasn't born here? I'd say, Arnie, that you're a better American than those people pretend to be. Well, believe me, we'll fight them. We'll weed them out. We'll give them a time. Fighting people who wouldn't come out into the open was as useless as Don Quixote fighting the windmill. We both lost. Someday laws would be written to punish intolerant people. And I prayed with all my power that I'd be there to help write them.
Marsh, if you'd only keep your big mouth shut, you could be elected to the legislature.
Oh, now, Finnis, how can I keep quiet and run for office, too?
Well, you don't have to go around yelling that there are some bad Americans here in town, do you? Makes people lose confidence in you.
If people don't have confidence in me, I couldn't represent them very well, could I?
Oh, Marsh, you're not being very practical.
I want that nomination, Finnis, very much. You see, I'll be frank with you. I can do more about hate groups from inside a lawmaking body than outside it.
Now, look, we're not a reform party. We play ball with people, and they play ball with us.
You'd expect me to be a robot for the party? I couldn't introduce any bill without your approval?
Well, if you want to put it that way.
How much respect do you think I could have for myself if I weren't forced to keep my principles within me? I became a lawyer because it gave me the opportunity of expression, and I refused to be gagged.
You're not cut out for my kind of politics. I'm sorry you just cost yourself your future. See you around.
For the next several years, the crops failed and there was a drought. Times were hard. Men even seemed to have lost perspective on law and order. I can remember vividly that hideous, suffocating afternoon when Joe and I were walking down Court Street. Not too far from us came the low murmur of men with the angry sound of hysteria. They were marching on the jail where a prisoner was housed who had committed an inexcusable and brutal crime.
Wait a minute, men.
Get out of the way, Fannin.
I'd just like to say a few words.
Fannin's going to stop us. You know where we're at.
Men, you've got to listen.
He ain't going
to need Look, I've known most of you all my life. Now give me a couple of minutes. Listen to me. Listen to me. Please, please.
This won't do any good, Marsh. Come on, let's go.
Please, this is my home. I was born here. I live here, but wherever I live, I must first live with myself, as you must live with yourselves. So I have nothing to lose standing here. My responsibility to the fool inside those walls is no more nor less than my responsibility to you and all men everywhere. I never saw that criminal's face, but if you were able to look into mine and I into yours, I cannot run away. So if you take him, you must take me first. Now listen to me! Reason is the law of life. The law itself is nothing but reason. Without it, we're clods, and I appeal to your reason, without which survival isn't worth the candle. Remember, the accused shall enjoy the rights to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. And if this is the law of the nation to whose allegiance we are sworn, then we must protect that law with our last breath. Therefore, how can we stand here and permit the sabotage of the American ideal? Better we go home and hide our shame.
Marsh, they're listening to you. They're listening to you.
I know. There is reason in men.
What does it add up to? The dreams of my youth somehow got lost through the years. What has replaced them?
You're a hick. You're a high-class planner. And I'm lucky I found it out in time.
Well, maybe you're right, Mr. Snell. But I know one thing. Money isn't everything.
Mr. Fannin, is it a crime to be a
foreigner? Arnie, it's your kind of man that's made this country what it is. I'm proud to have you as a neighbor.
Yeah, cut out for my kind of politics. I'm sorry you just cost yourself your future.
I don't know about that, Finis. But I'll still fight bigotry till the day I die. And that's a pretty good future. Yes, sirree.
Fort Mason's a pretty fine place. I never got rich here, but I've got a lot of friends. I kind of like being a country lawyer, Marsh. You can help so many people.
I hope I have been of some service, Pop. I may have helped a few people. Old man Bisbee, for instance, it'd do you good to know I helped him get another farm. And, well, it's something to have people trust you. To come to you with their misery and say, I need your help, Fannin, and you're honest.
27 years of happiness, Marsh. What more could I ask?
Oh, darling.
You old man, you wouldn't like it.
Well, it wouldn't be true. You see, when you come into a room, I'm just a boy.
Poor old Sam Halsey called. Said he's having a mess of trouble and needs your legal advice.
What did you tell him?
Well, darling, I didn't know what to say. Things being the way they are.
Well, what are you trying to do, Joe? Ruin my practice? Now, you just get him on the phone and tell him I'll be over as soon as I finish writing a letter.
But Sam hasn't the money to pay you a fee.
What difference does that make?
I'm so proud of you, Marsh. And you know why? You've always tilled your own acres, mended your own fences, tried to see that right was done. You've never made newspaper headlines, but you've done the really important things in life.
Oh, I don't know, Joe. But thanks anyway. I do realize that progress is a very slow thing. And no man is too small to have his stake in it. I've got a big stake in Fort Mason.
Yes, Marsh. Yes. I'll call Sam Halsey. I'll call him right away. You just write your letter.
Dear Mr. Priest, it is very good of you to wish to include my accomplishments in the Franklin commemoration brochure. The class of 1917 indeed paid me a great compliment when they nominated me the man most likely to succeed. But you see, when the old gentleman looks at his medals, he finds they are so few and far between that they don't bear discussion. I'm just a country lawyer. There's honestly nothing to tell.
Thank you.
Here again is James Hilton.
That was a wonderful performance, Lou Ayres. It's been nice to have you back with us again in the Hallmark Playhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Hilton. It's always a pleasure to attend the Playhouse in person, or as one of your many listeners. You know, your Hallmark cards and these fine programs help maintain Hallmark's tradition for fine things.
Well, we sincerely hope so, Lou, and we always try to live up to that.
Oh, I'd like to say to Frank Goss that the Hallmark Gallery artist's Christmas cards that he was talking about earlier certainly sounded intriguing and reminded me that I'd better get out and do my Christmas card shopping soon.
And while you're doing so, Lou, be sure and ask to see the Hallmark box selections. It's a mighty handy way to be sure you'll have a card for those last-minute additions to your Christmas card list.
I'll do that, Frank. Oh, Mr. Hilton, what's the play for next week?
We hope you'll all be with us next week when we celebrate the traditional holiday Thanksgiving with David Niven, starring in The Courtship of Miles Standish, a story that all of us treasure because it captures so well the true feeling of that day. And the following week, we have Miss Bishop, starring Martha Scott. Our Hallmark Playhouse is every Thursday. Our director-producer is Bill Gay. Our music is composed and conducted by Lynn Murray, and our script tonight was adapted by Jack Rubin. Until next Thursday, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
Remember Hallmark cards when you care enough to send the very best. Lou Ayres will soon be seen with Teresa Wright in the forthcoming RKO picture of The Capture. This is Frank Goss saying goodnight to you all until next week at the same time when James Hilton returns to present David Niven in our Thanksgiving Day story, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's The Courtship of Miles Standish. And the week following, Miss Bishop starring Martha Scott. And the week after that, Elizabeth Arnim's Christopher N. Columbus on the Hallmark Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Hallmark Playhouse, untuned to yesterday, a November 17, 1949 broadcast from CBS. The leading man in that episode, Lou Ayres, just a year earlier, received his only Oscar nomination for Best Actor in a Leading Role for his performance in 1948's Johnny Belinda, alongside actress Jane Wyman, who ended up taking home the Best Actress in a Leading Role award for the movie. And interestingly, she didn't utter a word in the motion picture, and reportedly her acceptance speech at the Academy Awards was the shortest on record for Best Actress. Probably a story that wouldn't work so well on radio. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lifonier. Now time for Dr. Christian with an episode called Room Clerk, a CBS episode from September 12th, 1945.
Dr. Christian's office, Judy speaking. Oh, hello, Mrs. D'Angelo. How's young Carlo? Did he enjoy going away to camp?
It's the Vaseline Program, the only show in radio where the audience writes the script. Tonight, the spotlight is on Louisville, Kentucky, and the prize goes to William W. Douglas for his comedy, Room Clerk, starring Gene Herschel as Dr. Christian, with Rosemary DeCamp as Judy Price.
Really? Little Carlo helped fight a brush fire, hmm? Well, that was a brave thing to do. Burned, he... Oh, my. Oh, I see. Well, thank heavens it was a minor burn. It's almost completely healed already, hmm? Who was the camp doctor? Oh, he's very good. Vaseline petroleum jelly, hmm? Oh, that's grand. No wonder it healed so quickly. Yes, there's nothing better for minor burns than Vaseline petroleum jelly. Medical reports on serious burn cases overseas tell about ever so many remarkable recoveries, thanks to a new treatment that includes the local application of petroleum jelly. Yes, that's right. Vaseline petroleum jelly is the world's leading brand. Oh, it's ideal for household burns. You just cover the burn with Vaseline petroleum jelly spread on fine mesh gauze. Then bandage firmly, but not tightly. If the burn is deep or covers a wide area, always call the doctor. Mm-hmm. I'd keep Vaseline petroleum jelly right in the medicine chest. It comes in both jars and handy tubes. Well, call again soon. Goodbye.
And so to our prize play, Room Clerk. The curtain rises on a warm afternoon in River's End with Dr. Christian and the perfect secretary, Judy Price, in the doctor's office just finishing the day's work.
Dr. Christian's office.
This here is George, ma'am. I'm the bellhop over here at the United States Hotel. The room clerk's done passed out on me.
Hmm?
Almost. He's sick, ma'am. He's plenty sick.
You say it's the room clerk of the United States Hotel. He is ill?
Yes, and he sure is. He's Mr. Charlie, and he asked me to call Dr. Christian. He wants a doctor to come right over.
Over where?
Over at the hotel. Mr. Charlie was working, but he ain't now. He fell over. Something wrong with his heart, he said.
Well, now, don't worry. I'll tell Dr. Christian right away.
Oh, thank you, ma'am, and thank you, but please hurry.
Dr. Christian?
Yes, Judy?
One of the bellboys at the hotel just phoned. He said that the room clerk just had a heart attack. He wants you to come right over.
Room clerk? At the United States Hotel?
Now, you know we have only one hotel. It's a man named Charlie somebody or other.
Oh, then it must be my old friend Charlie Stubbs. I'll drive right over. Heart attack again, eh? Well, Charlie's getting pretty old to be doing night work with that bad heart, too. Still, clerking in a hotel isn't hard work. In fact, it should be an easy job. Boy, I'm Dr. Christian.
P.S., I'm sure glad you're here.
Where's the patient? Where's Charlie Stubbs?
Oh, Willie and me, we helped Mr. Charlie over to the van in the lobby so he could lie down, Doctor.
I see. That was good work. George?
Yes, sir. That's me. I'm George.
Well, George, we must get all those people away, those people crowded around Mr. Charlie.
Yes, I know that. I know they shouldn't crowd up on him, but they wouldn't pay no attention to me.
I'm sorry, but you'll have to ask your people to move away. We have a very sick man here, and he needs plenty of air. Please move back.
What's the matter with him? Is he drunk?
Not any more than you are, sir. He's ill. Apparently, he has just had a heart attack. Now, will you please move back with the others? Oh, George.
Yes, sir?
George, get me a little water and a glass, will you? About 1/4 of a glass, I should say.
Yes, sir. Come right up, Doctor.
Well, George, I've done all I can for your Mr. Charlie here.
Yes, sir.
That hypodermic will hold things for a while. I've called the hospital, and they're sending an ambulance for him. He'll have to spend
But, Doctor, who's going to take care of the desk till Mr. Alex come in for the next trick?
The next trick?
Yes, sir. You see, we all work 3 shifts around here. Mr. Charlie, he works from 3 to 11. Then Mr. Alex come on and work from 11 to 7. Then Mr. Clarence work from 7 to 3 when Mr. Charlie's supposed to show up again. Now, that's the way it is. But who's going to work out the rest of Mr. Charlie's trick tonight if you send him to the hospital?
Why, where's the manager?
Well, he's Mr. Thomas. He's going to Chicago for an important conference. But that don't leave nobody because Mr. Alex ain't coming in till 12. He's out in a party or something. Maybe Mr. Charlie was going to work extra for him.
Well, why don't you get behind the desk and give out the keys and mail yourself? That's all there is to do, isn't it?
Yes, sir, that's about all. But me or Willie wouldn't go behind that desk for $1 million, boss.
Well,
And the guest is getting pretty riled up. They can't get their keys or their mail or nothing. Mr. Charlie's sure going to get in trouble about this. There's going to be one awful mix-up. Couldn't you go back to the desk, boss, and give out the mail and the keys so the guests will quit fussing and hollering?
Me? Why, I don't know.
Mr. Charlie sure appreciate it. Keep him out of a jam, boss.
Well, what has to be done?
Oh, you just sort out the mail and put in them little boxes on the back wall and give out the keys so the guests can get in their rooms and maybe answer the phone and tell everybody we're full up, tight. That's all, boss. You can do it easy. Please do it, boss, for Mr. Charlie.
All right, George. I'll do it.
All right, fine.
But you'll have to stay close by to help me.
Oh, I'll do that, boss. I'll stick right with you on the outside of the desk. Hey, come on around back this way. And that's the door to the back office. Now, be sure to shut it after you're inside. It locks itself.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Charlie done left it open when he staggered out and called for me and Willie. Willie, he's the elevator boy.
There you are. Give me the key to 308, will you? I've got to get up to my room and shave.
Just a minute, please.
That's the box. Right there. No. Over to the left. There. That's it. Now, any mail?
What's the name, please?
Noble. C.H. Noble.
Hey, look for mine, too, will you? Charles B. Stewart.
Yeah, mine, too. Look,
I'm expecting
Now, just a minute, please. Please, just a minute. This mail will have to be sorted. I'll give you your room keys now so you can all get into your rooms, but the mail will have to wait until later in the evening. When I have time to sort it out and place it in your boxes. Now we...
312, if you don't mind.
Yeah, 312.
See if there's a telegram.
Here you are, sir.
fine. Well, could you get me 316, please?
314 is mine.
316 is what I want. Get up in the room.
S 213 and 316. Now,
316, thank you.
Now, please, just a minute. Please, I'll have to make a phone call.
Dr. Christian's office.
Judy, oh, I'm glad I got you before you got away.
What's wrong? Is there anything?
Judy, drop everything and come right over here.
Where are you?
At the United States Hotel in hurry.
Is it an emergency? Do you need anything?
It's an emergency, all right. I'm in an awful jam.
I'll be right over.
I'm sorry, we haven't any rooms.
Room? Oh, what's a room? I don't want a room.
I'm sorry, we're filled up.
Filled up? Oh, why? Oh, I don't want a room. I got a room now. It's room number 402.
That's a house phone you're talking over, boss.
Oh, and what is it you want, 402?
What's the vice? Ginger ale. Send it right up, will you?
Yes, we will. We'll send it right up. George, see if you can get some ice and ginger ale up to room 402, will you?
Yes, sir, right away. But I'll get Willie to take care of him so I can stay here with you.
Good evening. I'm Horace P. Tuttle. I'd like to have my room, please.
Your room?
Yes.
Well, we haven't any rooms for rent.
Why, wired for a reservation.
I'm sorry, we simply haven't any rooms. We're filled up.
But I wired. You've got to have a room for me. I'm a salesman. I've stopped here before, and you've got to treat me right. And I want a sample room, too.
I'm sorry, we still haven't any rooms vacant.
Now, look, my good man. I've got two big sample trunks on the way over here from the station. I've got to have a place to sleep and a place to display my line, my merchandise, my samples, and besides...
And boss, if you'll excuse me, the sample room is full up with soldiers. We've got 10 cots in there and a soldier in each cot. My allows ain't going to be easy to move them out. Soldiers like to sleep.
Yes, but
why don't you try the YMCA? They might have...
My good man. Do you know my line, my samples? I sell ladies' lingerie. Can you imagine me trying to display silly slips, fragile nightgowns, and so forth in the halls or lobby of the YMCA? Can you picture that?
No, I can't.
Of course not. Well, you'll hear about this.
Judy!
I came as quick as I could, Dr. Christian. What's the trouble?
Everything. Oh, George, take Miss Judy around to the back. I'll let her in.
Yes, sir.
I've taken the simple job of a night clerk in this hotel, Judy.
Huh?
To help out my old friend Charlie. That bellboy George talked me into it somehow. At any rate, that's our job until 12 o'clock.
Our job?
Absolutely. I'm the room clerk. You are my assistant.
Well, but...
Now, first, I want you to sort out this pile of mail. Place the room numbers on the envelopes and file them in these little boxes back here. That alone will be a big help.
All right, Dr. Christian.
And hurry before that crowd of guests comes back. United States Hotel? I'm sorry, we haven't any rooms. Clerk speaking.
Could you all send me up a teeny little bit of soap? I'm just dying to take a shower.
Right away, ma'am. What's your room number?
204.
George, I hope you're taking all this down.
Yes, I'm getting it.
Hello.
There's a strange man trying to get in my room. Oh, he's in! Help! 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 Room 313, quick, help!
Quick, George, there's trouble in room 313. Let's go up there.
Oh, my.
Judy, take care of the desk.
And okay.
You stay here, George.
Yes, sir.
I'll go with Willie. And Judy, give these orders for Charlie Stubbs to the ambulance driver.
Here you are, Dr. Christian. Third floor. Number 313 is right down the hall.
You come along with me, Willie. Let the guests walk up. They must be desperate.
Yes, sir.
Help! Help! You get out of here! Oh, will somebody save me? Help! Help!
Here. What's going on here?
That man. He came in my room. He has a key.
What?
Sure, I got a key. You gave it to me, Doctor. I'm not trying to molest this lady.
He is, too. He opened the door and looked at me.
Me in my nightgown.
Look, Doctor, I'm Harry Blake. I'm a permanent here. I've lived in this hotel for a couple of years. When I saw you'd given me the key to 313 instead of 213, which I asked for, I figured they'd at last change my room and move my stuff up here. I've been moved before, and I asked Charlie weeks ago to move me away from that nut in 215 with a loud radio. That's all.
You say I gave you the key to this room?
Sure you did. How else could I have it? You handed me the key to 313, which is in the box right over 213. Common mistake for a new man. The room numbers on the boxes are at the top, right next to the key on the bottom of the box above. You saw my number 213 and grabbed the key just above it, which was the wrong key. That's the whole story.
Well, that explains things, doesn't it, madam?
Oh, I suppose so. But please go and leave me alone.
Honest, Doctor, I was trying to apologize to the old dame, but she was yelling so loud I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, I know. It's just a case of misunderstanding.
Oh, Dr. Christian, I most forgot to tell you. This lady was yelling so, but there's another lady in 301, and she's crying kind of soft-like.
What?
Yes, sir. She got a little girl who's sick, and she asked me to get the doctor for her. And they're new in River's End, only been here 2 or 3 days. Could you take a look at the doctor, at the girl doctor?
Certainly. Room 301, did you say?
Yes, sir.
Oh, here we are. Now, Willie, you run down and get Miss Judy to give you my medical bag, will you? Be sure to warn her about those keys and box numbers.
Yes, sir. Right away, doctor.
There we are, Mrs. Edwards. Your little daughter isn't in immediate danger. However, she's a very sick little girl. She has scarlet fever.
Uh-oh.
Scarlet fever? Oh, Dr. Christian, what will I do? My husband's in the army. He was to meet us here tomorrow for his furlough. We can't afford to stay here very long.
I'm sorry, but I'll have to report this. And we'll have to quarantine the whole hotel if she stays here.
But, Doctor, excuse me, please, sir. But we've had this trouble before. We just scoot the sick people out kind of quick-like to the hotel, to the hospital. Then we locks up the rooms and fumigates it so everything's safe. We sterilizes all the blankets and sheets and stuff. And that seems to be okay with the city health people. We just can't lock everybody up in the hotel, Doctor, sir.
Well, I suppose we could do it that way. Mrs. Edwards, get all of your things together. I'll call the hospital and have them send the ambulance for you and your daughter. And when your husband calls here for you tomorrow, we'll tell him where you've gone. Then you can make other arrangements. And now don't you worry. Everything will come out all right.
Yes, and that's right. Dr. Christian, he sure can fix things.
Oh, I don't know how to thank you, Dr. Christian. We'll see you at the hospital, of course. Oh, and your fees. We'll manage that as soon as my husband arrives.
Mrs. Edwards, we'll discuss all of that later. Come on, Willie. I wonder how Miss Judy's getting along.
She ain't, sir.
Huh?
Miss Judy ain't doing so good with them keys and the mail. She's making the same mistake you did, only more so. I warned her, but it was too late. And they's crowding at the desk exchanging keys, and that man in 402, he's getting pretty high by this time, and he phones the desk every minute. We better go downstairs, sir.
Come on, give me my key, will you? Listen, I've
got to
get out of here.
Oh, thank goodness you've returned, Dr. Christian.
Having trouble, Judy?
You know I am. Whoever numbered these boxes, well... Oh, the ambulance came and I sent Charlie Stubbs to the hospital.
Good. Now call them again and tell them to come right back.
Huh?
We have another patient for them. An isolation case. Scarlet fever.
Oh!
Room 301. Also make arrangement for a cut for the child's mother.
Yes, doctor. And... will you try to straighten out some of these wrong keys and mail while I phone?
Oh, yes, I'll do what I can.
Could I speak to you for a moment, sir?
Why, certainly, ma'am.
Could I please have a room? My son will get his furlough tomorrow, and we can meet here in River's End at this hotel.
Oh, I'm very sorry, but we simply haven't any rooms vacant.
Yes, I know. The war and every soldier's folks trying to spend a few days with him, but could you... well... it's nearly 12 o'clock and so late. Could I stay here in a chair in the lobby for the night? I'll pay you.
Your son's in the army, eh? Well, Mother, you just go over there and find a nice, soft chair and rest. Listen. Now, don't tell anybody. But I have just had a hunch, and that somebody is going to move out of. You can have their room.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now go and sit in the chair until I call you. Now, George.
Yes, I'm right here. But how are you going to fix up the soldier's mother when we ain't got no room?
Wait a minute, George.
All right.
Hello. Clerk speaking.
Hey, listen. What kind of hotel is this, anyhow? Every time I open any door in my room, it's the bathroom. I can't get out. I want to go out in the hall and get something. I want to come down to the lobby. Will you send up a boy?
Right away.
That fellow's just about ready to pass out, Doctor.
That's what I'm counting on, George.
Mm-hmm.
And about the soldier's mother. I'm going to show you a new trick in this hotel business.
Well.
Have you an extra curtain storeroom?
Yes, we got plenty.
Well, I want you and Willie to take a curtain, some blankets down to the furnace room and set it up.
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's nice and warm down there. Then you're to go up to room 402 and help the man get down to the cut.
To the cut.
Why, in his condition, he won't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So tell him that you are hiding him from the police or something, mm-hmm. or who are looking for him, to arrest him for being drunk.
Yes, sir.
They really would if he comes down the lobby and tries to go outside for something else to drink.
Well, you got something there.
Now, in the morning, the boys can tell him that they saved him from spending the night in jail. As soon as you and Willie get him to sleep, then call me on the house phone and rush up and change the linen in 402. Is that perfectly clear?
Boss, it's perfect, period. We'll fix him right up.
You know whose car that is? Out in front of the hotel? It's a little black coupe.
Yes, that must be my car, officer.
Your car? Now you know better than to park out there. That's a 15-minute limit street.
There was an emergency here. I had a heart attack. I'm Dr. Christian.
Oh, so you're a doctor, hey? What are you doing behind that desk? You're a hotel clerk.
Yeah, you mean I'm trying to be. I'm Charlie Stubbs' doctor. He had a heart attack early this morning. I attended him, sent him to the hospital. Spent the rest of the evening trying to hold down the job until the next man report.
I'm Alex, the next man, as you call him. You've done a fine job, Dr. Christian. I just talked to Willie and George. You've probably saved the hotel from a lot of lawsuits. Now, Mike, listen. Be a good guy and forget about that parking ticket. This really is Dr. Christian.
Okay, Alex. Good night, Doctor.
Good night. Hello.
Yeah, it's okay, boss.
Fine, George. Oh, Mother, come over here a minute, please. Mother, I have a nice room for you. There's the key. Room number 402.
Oh, you don't know how much I appreciate it.
Yes, I do. But it's mothers like you that all of us appreciate. Now, please go back to your chair for a few minutes until the bellboy comes to show you to your room.
Say, how in the world did you do that? 402 has been rapid.
It's a long, long story, Alex. Get George and Willie to tell you so you can carry on the plot in the morning. Well, as for me, I'm going home. Miss Judy, my secretary nurse, and I have had a very, very eventful evening. Are you ready to go, Judy?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes, and yes.
Good night, Miss Judy. And good night, Dr. Christian, and many thanks.
Good night.
What a night. Oh, you drive, Judy. I'm all worn out.
All right.
Now, how in the world did I ever let myself get into such a position?
Oh, it's just you, Dr. Christian. You're always trying to help someone with their troubles. Only this time you seem to have taken on quite a load.
Boss, wait a minute.
Huh? Why, it's George. Hold it, Judy.
Oh, boss, you can't go yet. You've got to come back. Room 308 is having a baby. And they're having it right now. Hurry, boss.
Cut the motor, Judy. Hand me my bags. Here we go again.
And the curtain comes down on another Dr. Christian Prize play with our star, Gene Herschelt, waiting to greet you. Men, you help make every first impression a good impression when you're careful about grooming. Keep your hair looking its well-groomed best. If it's stubborn, stiff, and dry, if you're troubled with loose, flaking dandruff, remember, these nuisances are signs of dry scalp. Combat dry scalp. Check it quickly, easily, with Vaseline Hair Tonic. Vaseline Hair Tonic contains no alcohol or other drying ingredients. It actually supplements natural scalp oils. Just 5 drops a day, applied with comb or directly on the hair, check dry scalp, and keep your hair perfectly groomed. Also, a brisk Vaseline hair tonic massage before each shampoo loosens dandruff, relieves itchy tightness. Vaseline hair tonic is the ideal care for both scalp and hair. And the proof is this. More bottles of Vaseline hair tonic are sold today than of any other hair tonic in America. Buy, try Vaseline hair tonic. Vaseline hair tonic is one of the many Vaseline brand products made by the Cheeseboro Manufacturing Company, owners of the trademark Vaseline. Now here is Gene Herschel.
Thank you very much. The prize play room clerk you heard tonight is the work of William W. Douglas of Louisville, Kentucky. And he tells us that he actually took a job as room clerk in a hotel to provide an authentic background for his play. Next week, we plan to present a prize play called Our Daughter Barbara by Louise Pickens of Charlotte, North Carolina. We invite you to listen next Wednesday evening to the Vaseline program, same time and same station. And until then, I'll say good night.
Miserable with hay fever? Well, don't let pesky airborne pollen make you suffer needlessly. Guard against it with a little Vaseline petroleum jelly in each nostril each morning. For relief from hay fever, ask for, try Vaseline petroleum jelly. Bob Anderson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Dr. Christian, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 12th of September, 1945 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday, be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lipponer. It's been a pleasure.